Welcome back to Easy Conversations. Before we jump into today's episode, I wanted to share an exciting announcement where Easy Conversations has partnered with Evergreen Podcasts and joined their network of podcasts. I'm looking forward to this continued partnership and making sure that we continue to deliver valuable content for the listeners. Please check out evergreenpodcast.com for more and also this podcast. Join me in this week's episode where I sit down with Gabrielle Pimstone to explore the profound journey of personal growth and transformation. Gabby shares her remarkable transition from the pressures of a high-stress job to a fulfilling career in coaching, highlighting the pivotal role of acceptance and the power of synchronicities in guiding her path. We delve into the significance of internal shifts and external environmental changes, uncovering the intricate interplay between the two. We also draw on Jungian psychology, and also at the end of the episode, dive a little bit into the power of dreams. Gabrielle Pimstone is an energy coach dedicated to assisting those on the cusp of change who need that crucial nudge moving forward. She shares her journey of resilience and reinvention, highlighting how her love of psychology and spirituality finally converged to reignite her passion and purpose and provide profound healing. She offers inspiration and practical tips to individuals to break free from stagnation and fear. Her central message is that making a meaningful life change is never too late. I hope you really get a lot out of this episode. Please check out all the ways you can find Gabby online. And also, you can leave up to a 5-star review at the end of the episode. And a brief word for our sponsors. One of the things that can often impact my mental health is working with my cell phone provider. That's why Easy Conversations has partnered with Mint Mobile. Mint Mobile has a special Paramount Plus offer for the listeners of this podcast in the U.S. I've been able to use Mint Mobile on my several trips to the U.S. and have found it to be amazing. For as little as $15 per month and taking 15 minutes to set up the eSIM, the whole process has been seamless, which has allowed me to stay connected and provide content without having to worry about expenses around roaming. Go to trymintmobile.com/easy10 to get premium wireless for as low as $15 a month. New customers can get any plan for $15 per month when they purchase a 3-month plan. That would require a $45 upfront payment, which is equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on the first 3-month plan only. The speeds can be slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plans. But check out trymintmobile.com for more details. New customers who purchase a plan on mintmobile.com before May 31st of this year get a 6-month subscription to Paramount Plus. Separate registration and payment to Paramount Plus will be required. Must subscribe to Paramount Plus by June 30th, 2024. After the 6-month period is over, the subscription auto-renews at regular price plus tax unless canceled. Terms and conditions apply. Go to mintmobile.com/easy10 to check out all the ways you can save money starting today. Today's episode is also sponsored by BetterHelp. Therapy can be very difficult for many people to start. In my personal experience, when I was going through my divorce, therapy allowed me to bridge a significant gap. With the help and support of my therapist, I was able to uncover a lot of repeated patterns and behaviors that were impacting my life. Through goal setting, I was able to focus on things that required attention, which allowed me to improve the relationship that I had with myself and, by extension, the relationship that I had with others. As a therapist, I've been able to see the positive benefits that clients are able to derive through healthy rapport and goal setting. BetterHelp allows a lot of flexibility where clients can schedule video sessions on the phone, or through messaging. In most cases, BetterHelp will match you up with a licensed therapist within 48 hours. If that's not a good fit for you, BetterHelp will work with you to find the right fit. Join over 4 million users today by following the link in the description or going to BetterHelp, that's H-E-L-P, BetterHelp.com/EZ10 to get 10% off your first month of therapy. All right, Gabby, welcome to the Easy Conversations podcast. Thank you for joining me today. Looking forward to the conversation we're going to have. Unique, but something I'm very much interested in. And yeah, can't wait to jump into it. But before we do, I do want to give you an opportunity to share with the listeners a little bit about yourself and who you are and what's brought you here. It's Monday morning on your end.
I'm in the future. Thank you so much, Furkan, and it's lovely to be here. I've been actually looking forward to this particular conversation. It's tapping into part of my background, not all of it, but a large part of it, which is that I worked for 27 years in organizational psychology. And in those 27 years, most of what I was working with was human transformation, helping large groups of people, sometimes 60,000 strong people, transform and move in a common direction. So that was my career for 27 years. But very briefly, during 2020, during the pandemic, I had a job, senior leader in one of Australia's banks. And for the couple of years prior to that, I'd started to feel this disconnect from a career that had in its grip for so many decades. And this particular job, I was deeply unhappy and I was stressed. I was actually anxious. I wasn't sleeping. And I took myself off on a Sunday morning for a walk because I woke up early on Sunday morning with the blues, realizing I had to go to work the next day. And I listened to this podcast and this woman was talking about also living in the grip of anxiety, which had been my story since my dad passed away when I was 9. And something in her story stirred me into action. I realized I'd been living in this invisible kind of spiritual prison for most of my life, and the bars had kept me trapped in perpetual anxiety, dread, trepidation. And I was in a phase of my life that was just really amplifying what had been with me for many decades. So I took action. I resigned from my job the next day, and then it took a couple of years to really study a different modality that I've now brought into my change practice. And I've stepped out of the corporate world, and I'm doing my own coaching, individual and group coaching. So at the age of 50, my life changed. My career pivoted on its head, which is unexpected, but very welcome now.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. Thank you for sharing. I'm shocked that you pulled the trigger the very next day, because for me too, it's still going on, but I haven't pulled it fully yet, although that has started. But I guess just to start there, what held you to it the very next day?
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, to bring some additional context, because we are going to talk about Jungian work. Carl Jung talks a lot about synchronicity. So it was kind of synchronous that you came across this podcast while you were questioning things for yourself. But yeah.
I love the idea of synchronicities, because there were several, and that was just the first one that I was picked up a random podcast, and it was really just, it was a catalyst in my life. The idea of synchronicities came up a little couple of years later as well, because really I resigned from my job the next day, but I stayed in the corporate world for another couple of years because I needed an exit plan. I wasn't going to be rash about it. My whole life I'd made knee-jerk decisions and I wasn't going to do it this time. And so I carried on with the corporate grind, but I had a broader perspective that somehow I might be nearing the end of this. That made it a little bit more tolerable. But the second synchronicity came when a little short time after that podcast, I was I think I was thinking, I don't even know if I said it out loud, but I need a different modality to get myself out of this rut and to help my clients. And as the synchronicity came my way, because I had this advert that just popped up on my Instagram reel. And there was a guy who was talking about the importance of mastering energy as a means to changing your life. And they have these weekend workshops. They're typically marketing tools, but I went, I think it was $10 or something. And I went, and he landed up becoming my teacher. I studied under him for 18 years, for 18 months. And I became a level 3 energy master, which I now throw into the mix. But it was really interesting because I thought the question, I need a different modality. And then this advert popped up in my Instagram stream. So that was another synchronicity, the universe really just supporting me and giving me another nudge forward.
Yeah, no, I like that. I appreciate that. And just to, out of curiosity, to understand a little bit more about your background, like you said, you were doing organizational change for 27 years in the corporate side of things. Is that why you were working for a bank? And,
yes.
And then you just wanted to completely remove yourself from that corporate culture and go off on your own. Why did you need that drastic change? And I know you shared a little bit about it, but what has it allowed you to do now that you're working for yourself?
I think sometimes when we change, we can do a lot of inner work, which is what I'm all for that. But there are also times where you've got to change your environment. And that is what I deeply knew. What had started to happen was I was thrived in the corporate world for about 20 years. And then suddenly the dynamics started to trip me up. And in fact, I started to experience things that I knew were there before, but they never really impacted. Things like corporate bureaucracy, couldn't get anything done. And I started saying to myself, I can't make an impact because everything takes so long to get going. That was the one thing. The other thing that started really tripping me up were corporate politics. And I couldn't get rid of that. That's just part and parcel. In fact, it used to be an inherent part of my job in working in the field of psychology and organizations, helping people get through those tricky dynamics and improve their interpersonal connections and communication despite those barriers. But I couldn't get past them anymore. And so I think the only answer was to switch up my environment. And I knew the answer was there because I'd done a lot of work over a few years, really trying to reframe, trying to shift how triggered I would get, and just did a whole lot of introspection and personal work, and nothing was changing. In fact, things were escalating and getting worse. So that's what got me, I would say. I think it's an important message because part of change, you can really, it's about doing the inner work, but there are times where you got to eliminate things from your environment as well. And so that's what I did. And that got me out of there. What it enabled me to do, which is the other part of your question, was really just step into my authentic self, because I'd really strayed so far from that, and do the things that I enjoy and do the work where my magic is and attract my dream clients and those kinds of things that I couldn't have done sitting in these big banks.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think everything has energy, right? So people, environment, and if you're trying to make certain changes, you can feel drained because you haven't really paid enough attention to the environment you're putting yourself in, or even the people you're surrounding yourself with. And we don't fully appreciate that in the world today. And I appreciate you sharing that. But the whole thing around change, right? So yeah, that's your goal, but you had to do it yourself. And there's so much resistance around change. And, you know, when we first connected, we talked about this resistance.
Yeah.
Why? It's fairly obvious. Humans, we get comfortable in our environments, and it's tough for us to be able to step into the uncertainty or into the discomfort and see what may happen. And sometimes it's not as bad as we think it may be. And sometimes it's even better than we imagined it to be. So why, in your thoughts, do we struggle so much with change?
Well, firstly, I want to really wholeheartedly agree with what you just said, in that often the imagined, the anticipatory anxiety is worse than what actually pans out in real life. It's such an important point you've made. So maybe just to turn the language a little bit on its head, and then I'll talk a little bit of why change is hard, because people often talk about this thing called change resistance. And I actually wrote an article on LinkedIn about it last week, because I don't think people necessarily resist change. Mm-hmm. Think about times you changed jobs, moved continents, got married, got divorced, started a family. Did you resist that change? No. We only resist change when it doesn't take us forward in our lives, where it doesn't lead to improvement. So I come from a really firm belief that we've got an innate desire to change within us, and sometimes we just need help accessing that. So I would prefer, if it's okay with you, talking about why change is difficult, because it's different to resisting change. And in my experience, there are a couple of reasons. There are a few main reasons. You've already spoken to one of them, the fear of the unknown. But there are a couple of things. I think one of the most difficult phases of change is getting off the starting blocks. I saw an incredible quote. In fact, it was yesterday, and I wrote it down because I knew we were meeting today. And it said, if you have the courage to start, you have the courage to succeed. And I thought that really encapsulates the challenge getting off the starting blocks, doesn't it? And so you spoke about the fear of the unknown. Stepping into uncharted territory triggers fear, triggers uncertainty, and we worry about what might lie ahead of us. But the corollary to that, which is equally important, is stepping out of your comfort zone requires effort, and it can feel uncomfortable. So even if a situation isn't ideal, it's familiar. Think about being in a long relationship or marriage that's just not working, but you don't act on it for a long time. As humans, I think you could probably agree that we naturally gravitate towards what we know, even if it's not serving us. So absolutely. I think, yeah. And then I think the other one is the attachment to identity, and change often requires us to shift our identity or our self-concept. In my case, I had to let go of being a successful bricklayer. What would I be without that, for example? And letting go of familiar roles or labels, like I am married, I am a wife, or I am a husband. Those things are difficult to let go of. They can be very challenging. So I think some of it is attachment to identity as well. And the other thing that I've seen in my own life and have seen in a lot of people's lives that I've worked with is that we creatures of habit, and it's linked to what I was saying earlier, but breaking old habits and forming new ones take effort, and it requires unlearning. It's a bit of a hassle, right? So it's what I call the inertia of familiar ways of acting, thinking, being, that can make it difficult to initiate change. So that would be, I think, some of the reasons why getting off the starting blocks is so difficult. And in my experience, that is often the most difficult part of change. There are others, but that is a really prevalent one, I guess.
Yeah, go on.
No, you go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I think I appreciate you expanding on that. And I think part of the problem where people get stuck, and I've come to learn that even through reading the book Atomic Habits by James Clear, where we tend to cut out negative things, right? If we feel like there's a habit that we don't like or we want to change, we'll just go try to go cold turkey. But it's not, that's what makes it a little bit more difficult for people to stay consistent with it. What you really need to do is, if you're trying to get or remove a habit, then it's replacing it with something else. And yes, that's where you see the positive effects. And as you were saying, we are creatures of habit. So we do need something to use to move forward.
And yes,
that's something I just wanted to share there. But yeah.
And I think you're right. And I think the what you're talking about is another challenge in change. I think inherent in what you're saying is moving through motivational lapses. So we're on the journey of change. We're doing things differently. We're trying new affirmations. We're trying to change our thoughts, whatever you're doing. We maybe started meditation. And then everything feels great in the first few weeks. And then a month or two into it, you feel, oh gosh, it's not shifting quickly enough. And it's the motivational lapses. And I think that's the other really challenging part of change that we face. Once we've gotten off the starting blocks, how do you keep new habits up? How do you keep progress going? And I think we're all inherently motivated by progress as humans. I think it gives us a sense of achievement, of triumph, of feeling a little bit more in charge of our lives. And so what we have to do when we're going through big change is we've got to put practices in place that allow us to see progress that we've made. I keep journals. Yesterday, I was looking back on my journal. And it provides really valuable perspective. It provides inspiration. Some people I know, I don't do this, but I write, but some people record video diaries. So they document, their progress and their reflections that way. And they'll record themselves discussing their experiences and so forth. Whatever works for you. But I think the idea of putting something in place that can hold up the mirror and say, you know what? You've taken a step forward. Even if it's a small step forward, you didn't react. You took a deep breath before reacting to what that person said to you. Small little things like that. We've got to pat ourselves on the back and acknowledge them.
Absolutely. Yeah. And one of the things I also see people get stuck on with things that they cannot change. And I was part of a program recently, and every day with the patients, we were doing the serenity prayer. And I found that fascinating, the reminder that there's things that I cannot change and there are things that I can, and God give me the wisdom to know the difference, right?
Exactly.
What are your thoughts on that, where we tend to feel like we want to control everything in our environment, and that can feel defeating too, right? Because now you feel like out of control.
Yes. I think the need for control taps into the need for safety, the need for stability, the need for consistency, and that's a human need. And I think we've all got elements to that. I'm a graduate of that process. But when you were talking, I did a little diagram, because I think there's a third element. There's things we can't control. There's things we can change, but there are also things that we can just influence,
yes,
as opposed to control. I think that's a healthy place to strive for, rather than striving for trying to change things. What can I influence? And it's a total cliche, but it's very true. We can always influence our response. We can always influence how we take on stimulus from our environment, even if we can't change that stimulus. So I like to teach people how to shift from the things I can't control to the things I can influence. I may not be able to control them, but influence. I think it's a healthier endeavor. Certainly was for me.
Absolutely. And I know we're going to go down this path, so probably a good time to go this way, segue, but that attachment piece that you touched on earlier, and from a Buddhist perspective, root of all suffering is attachment. So letting go, and you're right, there is an aspect of things that we can influence, but not getting attached to the outcome. And I say this with no judgment, because I struggle with this on a daily basis. It's a battle. Reminding myself, am I what is in my control and what I can do in front of me is truly all I can do. And everything else outside of that is not something I can influence, even in terms of the outcome, but I can just do my best. And letting go of that attachment is a daily practice. But what are your thoughts on that? Because I know you said you've, in your work, mixed the East and West type of approach. Yeah. Wonder if that's something that resonates with you.
It resonates so much because I'm so caught when it comes to this letting go myself, because that's the Buddhist belief, and I think it's magnificent. But there's also the psychological belief, which is we've got intrinsic human needs and drivers, and that's what makes us human. And there's some archetypal ones, like the need for belonging, the need for affirmation, the need for progress and growth, the need for growth. There are certain needs that drive us as human beings. I have never been successful in turning them off. What I work with on myself and with people is when we're talking about these needs and letting go, there's usually an emotional component to it. And what I've found is it's really useful to differentiate between feeling an emotion, feeling a need, and being the emotion, being the need. And I think my journey has been on shifting from being my emotion, which was primarily anxiety, to feeling it appropriately. I don't think it is realistic for me as a human being, and certainly not the people I work with, to let go of attachment to things as much. It's just an easier thing to release the stranglehold that things have on us. And so in my own experience, working with grief, loss, and anxiety throughout my life, I was that. My energetic frequency was just anxiety, fear, terror, dread, anxiety. And I have worked to shift that out from my dominant frequency to feeling anxiety when it's appropriate. There are times in one's life you should be feeling anxious, because feeling anxiety can propel you to action. So, for example, if business is slow or if work is not going well, it's appropriate and it's healthy to feel anxiety and then to ask, but not to be trapped in the anxiety, to feel it and then say, what can I do to alleviate my suffering and my anxiety? So, that would be my perspective.
Yeah. I agree with you wholeheartedly there too, because that's, as you were sharing that in terms of being the emotion, what came to me also was what really happens to us when we experience shame, right? We become the behavior, we become the thought. And that's where a lot of us get caught in that shame spiral, right? And I often have to remind people that there's a fine line between guilt and shame, where you're feeling bad about what you did, as opposed to saying that I am this thing, right? And I feel like even with emotions, that can be the case, where if you're feeling down or you're not feeling great and internalizing that, that's where we can feel shame. And shame can be so debilitating for people. And then it just becomes that spiral, as I alluded to, because we want to run from it. We want to hide from it. We try to cover it up, perfectionism,
yes,
or directing it out towards other people so we don't have to take responsibility or look at it. I think that's the biggest piece. And there's that whole notion of, touched on Carl Jung's work, but even that collective unconscious he talks about, where those things keep coming up to us and we won't be able to work through them until we face them, right?
So. I love what you're saying. And I just, what you're saying about shame is a whole podcast in and of itself. There's so much to say about it. I worked through shame. I took 3 weeks I really immersed myself in shame. I had an experience where I've lived with a lot of shame in my life, and I was that perfectionist, and I would always over prepare for workshops. I run group process all the time, and 27 years into my career, still doing it. But I remember running a session with a group where, for some reason that I still don't know, it wasn't a panic attack. I actually left my body and I just disconnected from what was going on and was terrible. It's just really, I couldn't bring myself back in. I had my conscious mind saying, come on. And I was somewhere else. I was not in the room anymore. It was a really a bad process. And I sat with shame for 3 weeks. And you're right, because shame becomes you. And I hid from the world. I deflected my thoughts until I thought, you know what? I'm going to just lean into this. What's the worst that can happen? From that episode, they thought I was a terrible facilitator, mate. They wondered what was going on for me. I don't know. I'm a great facilitator. It was one sort of thing, but there I was like flagellating. And I really immersed myself in shame. And the thing with emotional release and energetic release is you got to sit in it. What's that saying? The only way through is out, or something. The only way out is in, or something like that. Got to lean into it. And shame is a big one. Anger is another one. Being the emotion versus feeling the emotion. You can feel angry, put down boundaries, say to somebody, listen, that's not okay. But the feeling, the extent, the sense of I am the anger is the reactive rage, a reactive anger where, you know, it's in charge of you. You're not in charge of it anymore. So you can apply this process to any emotion, but you're so right about shame. It's one of the most painful emotions. It's the one emotion we actually want to avoid and really just move on from as quickly as possible. And yeah, so I think we could talk about shame till the cows come home, and I would still have more to say about it.
Yeah.
I get it. It's a toughie.
Yeah, and I think what you're sharing there with your experience in terms of where you had this out of body thing, I think one of the defense mechanisms that we tend to use when we're overwhelmed is disassociation, right?
Yes.
I'm assuming that was probably the case in terms of that shame was so overwhelming that you had to almost disconnect completely from yourself, right? So in your work and coming back, I know you shared that you have this curiosity around using a Jungian approach, right? So I'm just curious to understand myself how that all fits in to your work, and how is it different from some of the other stuff that people are offering?
I work with archetypes first and foremost. So if I'm running, I'm actually trained in a form of facilitation that's Jungian. It's based on depth psychology. But it's got a lot of Jungian stuff in it. So working with the collective unconscious group or an organization, like a microcosm of the collective unconscious, but what's sitting in the collective field and what mind versus what am I carrying on behalf of the system, on behalf of others. I work with archetypes. When people talk, I'm fascinated with language. I'm actually becoming more and more fascinated with it because the words we use and the resonance that the words have really give us an insight into our inner world. And so when people talk and they're in communication with me, I'm looking for snippets that give me a sense of what's the archetype. What is that archetype coming from? And when we work with shifting energetic states, archetypes are awesome because if you say, for example, I'm going to be very simplistic with this, but if your language and your point of view is very much steeped in the victim archetype, then what I do with people is I help them shift and reframe, because archetypes, we've got all the archetypes in us. That's why they're archetypal, is to access the truth from another archetype and to unlearn the victim and to bring in, for example, the hero. Or the, I don't know what it is. I'm just talking off the cuff. So archetypes I work with a lot. Also, there's this beautiful, you were alluding to it earlier, when it comes to change and working through challenges with change or change resistance, right? Jung said, we can't change anything until we accept it. So when we resist or deny our current state or our current circumstances or our role in creating it, we create internal barriers that impede our capacity to change. And so what I work and fundamental to my model is getting people to shift from, I know I've got to change, to I own the change. Like, I accept what's happening in my life and my role in it. And that's deeply Jungian as well. The other way that I work with Jung is in with dreams, because he contributed an enormous amount to dream work. And I find that a really powerful modality to heal and shift our lives.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And I think in terms of the dream work, that's probably another episode on its own. But just to touch on it briefly, I think there's an aspect of our subconscious or unconscious telling us what we need to deal with, right? And that's what you talked about when it came to our dreams, in terms of what information are they trying to relay. The other piece you were sharing around that change, if we're not willing to look at it and accept it, I think that can also, from my perspective, impede our spiritual growth too. And until we're not willing to accept things the way they are and then grow from it, I don't think you can fully go into that spiritual realm and have that spiritual growth. And for many people, that can be very uncomfortable to hear because of their own barriers or own traumas or whatever it might be. But that's at the root of it, at least how I see it. So again, just want to get your thoughts around that.
I agree wholeheartedly with what you're saying. And I think in many ways, we were talking earlier about letting go of stuff, the Buddhist perspective, but I think acceptance is more palatable for me because, like, I can't detach from my life, but I can accept my circumstance. That's possible for me. Yes. And what acceptance means, right? What acceptance means for me and for the people that I work with is saying, these are my circumstances. I'm, for argument's sake, God forbid, but I'm not well at the moment. And I am well. I'm just giving you an example. People who've been diagnosed with disease, you can't fight that. At some stage, you've got to accept this is what I've been dealt with. Now, how am I going to improve the quality of my life or whatever the case may be? We've all got things in our lives that we'd prefer not to be prevalent. And as adults and as humans, we've got to just, the first part of acceptance is saying, okay, this is where I'm at in my life. And then a little bit more advanced form of acceptance is to say, how did I get here? And what has been my role in getting to this juncture in my life?
Yeah, I agree. And I think acceptance gives us the agency then, right? Because now you're not resisting whatever you are. Now you're like, okay, I've accepted this. Now how can I move forward? And you have way more agency. But I think there's this misconception around acceptance that, oh, I'm just rolling over, I'm just giving up. And it's the opposite. In fact, you're taking your power back, because now all your energy that's been focused on resisting this one thing can be directed towards something productive and moving forward. And you can have this massive shift. And I think that's where a lot of people get stuck, right? They're just stuck. Things are, right? And even with illnesses too, I think you hear stories about people who finally come to accept it and perhaps it goes away just because they've been able to come put their energy to something completely different rather than fighting it.
Exactly. Same with people who can't have kids. Classic example. Where you put your energy is where things grow and things start to cultivate and germinate. And so I don't want to get too raw because it can feel a bit simplistic, but where energy goes, where focus goes, energy flows. What's that saying? Something along those lines. And that's how we create our reality.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's also about, there's the metaphysical aspect to it as well, in terms of, and you think about it from aspect of consciousness, but once you're able to even look at things from a different light, right? And again, I don't want to say you can just simplify things and say, oh, everything's positive, but when you're able to look at life happening for you,
yeah,
and appreciate that everything, as you may not see it in the moment, is an opportunity, then your reality changes too, right?
It does.
I say this because it's something I deal with myself every day. It's a daily battle. There are things that come up and I'm resisting them. I'm upset. I'm trying to fight them. But often it's taking a step back and recognizing, okay, I don't see what this opportunity is, but I'm just going to have that faith and acceptance that I'm going to lean into it, as you were sharing earlier. Lean into it. And how can I shape my own reality by being the person I want to be rather than this person putting up a fight?
You know, what you're talking about, it's had such deep resonance with me, because one of the things, I don't teach it as much as emulate it with my clients, is how do you find the joy in transformation, the gratification of transformation, growth, learning, and even adversity? Because I think part of that, there really is so much that we can take that when we're going through big change, that is actually gratifying. Those moments where you have a light bulb comes on and you have a moment of self-insight, those are inspirational moments. The moments where you realize that you've taken a step forward, you've made some progress, may not be at the finish line, but you've certainly made some progress, those are inspirational moments. The moment that you reach for when you're feeling stuck, and you listen to an interesting podcast that gives you a different perspective, or you read a book or an article that really helps you see the world from a different vantage point. That's thrilling. And so there's a lot of fulfillment and joy that we can get while we're changing. And there's meaning that we can find in adverse circumstances as well. That's not a popular message, but it'd be my.
Yeah, the meaning piece is so important, because we tend to lose sight of how profound that is. People are constantly struggling. They're either in a depressive state and they can't seem to claw themselves out of it. But that's what's missing. It's that sense of meaning in life, meaning in the experience, and recognizing that's your purpose, right?
Yeah.
And how can you look at it from that perspective? I think that could be the biggest shift for many people, but that's where I think we all tend to get lost, is not being able to see the meaning in every little thing, right? Like every interaction, I find if you're able to take a higher resolution view, has so much meaning. If you think about how it can impact, like just me having a positive interaction with you, for example, can allow us to both walk away feeling better. And then whoever we come across from there on, can then we have that cascading effect with those people as well. And that can be so meaningful.
I agree. And the way that I talk about meaning and purpose is it inspires a call to action. That's what it does for me. When I see the bigger picture and I can tap into the bigger meaning and bigger purpose of what's going on in my life, then I can actually, it inspires me to move forward. It inspires a call to action, to shift things, to really energize as one.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. No, and coming back full circle, I don't think any of those things happen without change.
They don't. I actually prefer to use the word trans. I was talking about this, I think it was on a podcast last week, I can't remember, but to somebody last week about that, like the word, there's a difference between the word change and the word transformation. Like I feel resistant to the word change, because when we're talking about change, I feel like I've got to step through hurdles. It feels like a lot of effort. Whereas when I talk about transformation, what I get a felt sense of that word is I've got to the other side and my life is very different. And that's really the draw card, going through the path that is a little bit less traveled and actually looking at yourself and dealing with your demons, is that on the other side, the transformation, it's that you're, how you entered the process, you're a different person to how you exited it. And that's why I love the word transformation so much. And I find that people that I work with resonate with it so much more than the word change, because change, doesn't it feel like, oh God, it feels like it's an effort.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, all anything worth having requires effort, right? And I think, and sometimes there's pain involved too with transformation, right? That's when I know that I'm on the right path.
Yeah, no, that's true.
Yeah, if I didn't experience pain or resistance, then maybe I'm not transforming.
Yes, it's true. It's all part of the process. And I'm on a mission. If you look at my Podmatch profile, you see I'm on a mission to get people excited about this process and lean into the pain. I'll just give you, I'll share an example of what can happen when you lean into the pain. Because I had two geriatric cats that were about 21 years old and they died a couple of years ago. I had to put them down and they were really ill. They died within 6 weeks of each other. And when the first cat died, I actually was devastated. I cried for days. It was very difficult. And I took myself off to my local beach. I did a walking meditation on the beach, where I often do it. And I just wept. I wept. I leaned into the grief. I just felt every contour of the grief. And then 17 minutes later, I popped out and I felt this peace that I cannot explain to you. It was, and then I realized that the human body can't hold onto grief and this kind of intense pain for longer than that. We'd implode. And so really that's all it takes, is to just sit for 15, maybe 20 minutes and go through the emotion. And what I came out, there was an internal shift in me. I realized that grief was just an expression of my love for my animal. And that gave me so much peace and gentleness, and everything just transformed. So I saw and I witnessed in a very short 20-minute period of time, grief transform, because I gave it a chance. I let it express itself and it then dissipated. It was a really beautiful experience.
Yeah, no, thank you for sharing that. And I agree. And it goes along the whole line of not becoming your emotion, but just feeling and accepting it, right? Not resisting it. So you were able to hold space for yourself and let yourself feel all of it without shaming yourself for whatever was coming up.
Yes.
It ties everything together nicely, but I've really enjoyed this conversation, Gabby. Thank you so much for sharing your story and the work you're doing. Is there anything else you feel like we haven't talked about or touched on that be of benefit to the listeners?
I think we haven't touched on dream work, but that's going to take us a long time. I don't think we're going to open that up. Maybe just a recommendation for people before they go to sleep is to just sit in a quiet space. Let a question that you want answered about your life percolate. Before you go to sleep, ask your dream to resolve that question. When you wake up in the morning, document what came up and get into the habit of working more mindfully with your dreams and documenting your dreams, because there's incredible healing that comes from that. So that's really just my parting word.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I've started doing that beginning of this year. Started the writing. Write down the dreams in the morning and kind of analyze them in a way. And there's always something there to be taken from it. And sometimes I've had to go back and draw more inspiration or meaning from those dreams. And sometimes our perspective changes too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I do appreciate that. What are some ways listeners can find you, or if they wanted to get in touch with you to learn more about your work, what are some ways do that?
Well, to learn more about my work, go to my website. I'm sure you'll have the link on your show notes. To get in touch with me, you can go there as well. There are multiple ways to get in touch with me. But DM me, get onto Instagram, follow me on Instagram. Or if you don't want to follow me, just DM me and I'll respond really quickly that way.
No, that's great. I will put all of that in the show notes. But thank you again, Gabby. This was great.
Thank you. I had a lot of fun. Thank you so much.
Thank you for checking out this episode with Gabby. As always, please leave a review. You can leave up to a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, or leave a comment. I always love hearing from you. And if you haven't done so, please subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. That's the best and easiest way to support this podcast. You can also check out the sponsors in the description or check out evergreenpodcast.com to see their network of podcasts, including this one. And finally, you can also subscribe to the Easy Reflections newsletter, a weekly newsletter that I send out summarizing these podcast episodes and also reflecting on different mental health topics that I'm thinking about. Thank you again, and until next week.